Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. This evening I would like to give a talk on the subject of attachment, upadana, and its effects on the human being, and how we overcome the upadana, the attachments and clingings which appear in our minds, in our existence from time to time. And also how we overcome the very deep-seated, pervasive attachments which keep us stuck to the wheel of samsara, especially those deep-seated ones, the ones we should really be concerned about. Because the superficial attachments are those which create just a small amount of suffering in us. They can appear to be great suffering for us, but they are suffering which doesn't last that long compared to the suffering of rebirth in this endless cycle of wanderings called samsara. It's a deeper one which is most important. But for many practitioners, especially for monks at the very beginning of one's monastic life especially, one does come across various attachments, and one can see just how it does cause difficulty, suffering. It causes the mind to waver and shake away from its peaceful, quiet state. And that can be a first little reflection or first little piece of insight for one, to see that when the mind shakes and goes from a state of peace, that very shaking, that very wobbling, is called dukkha. It's an aspect of dukkha, and it's a very real and powerful aspect of dukkha which each one of us should know very well. The mind which is shaking and moving, which has no peace, a mind which has in that time, in that moment, a separation from fulfillment, a separation from ease, a fact of not being at peace inside and having to search to settle this mind. Just like something which is bobbing up and down or moving from right to left, it needs to be still, to be calmed, before there can be true peace and ease of the mind. And that wobbling is a very important aspect of dukkha which one would do well to notice. But the superficial attachments which we have, our habits, our likes and our dislikes, one can see just how those do give this superficial suffering in this world. And if one cannot give up those types of attachments, then there's very little hope of getting rid of the deep-seated attachments. It does seem to be that when one digs into the earth, one has to dig the surface first of all, before one can go deep into the bedrock. And it does seem to be in this practice which is leading to enlightenment, one does have to overcome these superficial attachments first of all. The superficial attachments, it would be well to look at them in terms of the eight Lokiya Dhammas. The eight Lokiya Dhammas are gain and loss, praise and blame, happiness and suffering, and honour and dishonour. And each one of these, with its opposites, is for people of the world, what they attach to, what they cling to, what they search for. If one is asked the question, why does a person act? Why do they speak? Why do they even think? What is the purpose behind this? very often you'll find implicated one or more of the eight Lokiya Dhammas. One does, one acts, one speaks, one makes effort for even such worldly things as praise, and to avoid blame, to be honoured and to be respected and to be appreciated in this world, and not to be blamed or rejected, to have gain and the comfort which comes from having what you want, whether it's the extra tea bags or whether it's the whatever it is one thinks is necessary for one's physical comfort, the possessions which one accumulates over the years, even as a monk. And most importantly, this superficial sukha and dukkha. We, the people who are blown around by the search for happiness and avoiding dukkha and suffering. And very often the attachment goes to praise, attachment goes to honour, attachment goes to gain, the attachment goes to this exterior happiness of ours. We search for these things, we run towards them. I point out in a very searching and a very running, it's a form of dukkha. As if that there before you was a beautiful object and a very running for it, the exertion to try and attain it, to get it, the worry about getting it, the disturbance about trying to attain the goal of these Lokiya Dhammas. That by itself is suffering, is a form of dukkha. It's a lack of ease of the mind, a mind which is separated from what it wants. And you all know that the way of this exterior search for these Lokiya Dhammas means as soon as one gets it, it disappears and one has to go running for something else. Or if one doesn't get it, one gets disappointed when one gives up the chase. Whatever, it never gives a rise to peace, to ease, to a solution from the problem. However, many people are attached to these things and they can find no way out. No way out of this running through samsara. Running after this little carrot which is always just beyond your grasp. We still grasp for it. The whole idea of like grasping for this carrot just in front of you gives a very good indication of what this upadhana really is. It's a grasping without never really reaching and attaining the object which you're grasping for, but always grasping, going out to grasp. That going out of the mind to grasp onto something is the meaning, as I understood it, of the asavas. The asavas, this movement of the mind outside of itself onto some exterior object where we think we'll find happiness, peace, fulfillment. It's a movement of the mind, the outflowing of the mind onto some other object in space or in time. Something else than what you have now. And that very grasping, that very outflowing is in itself dukkha. But the problem of the human being is it's hard to see this. It's hard to see this because of the habits which we have in our mind, which have been there for so many lifetimes. And it's the purpose of the Dhamma to point out these habits, and in their pointing out, in their seeing, there comes an opportunity and a chance of detaching and letting go. Whereas the exterior, the superficial objects of grasping, one should see very clearly that these are not going to cause happiness, and so one should let go of these. Whether it's a food which one eats, whether it's a place where one lives, a monastery or wherever, one should know that these things are not worthy objects to grasp after. That you'll never find happiness and satisfaction in the food that you eat. Even if you cook it yourself and prepare it yourself, you never find happiness and satisfaction in the praise of others. In fact, you'll find that where you deserve praise, you get blame. And often where you deserve blame, you get praise. And the praise and blame, the honor or dishonor from others, is just so fickle and uncertain, it's a fool's game to seek one's happiness therein. And even in the physical happiness and suffering, that this too is beyond your control. Whether it's happiness or comfort of the body, or happiness and comfort elsewhere, that these things are fickle. They arise through causes, they disappear through causes, and many of those causes are literally beyond you, and you cannot do anything about it. So one should not attach to things which one cannot do anything about, but one should let go. And indeed, the realization that these things are beyond you, they're beyond your control and your power, should be enough to cause the letting go to happen. But it's because that we think these things are in our power, that these things are possible to control, are possible to reach and achieve and to grasp and to keep, that we follow this delusion of grasping. The Buddha talked about the four upadanas, the kama upadana, the grasping after the sensory world, the world of the five senses and delight therein, the ditta upadana, the grasping, the clinging onto wrong views, the silabhata upadana, the clinging and grasping onto the view that liberation can be achieved through the practice of certain ceremonies or rites or initiations or whatever. And lastly, the grasping on the view of a self, an essence inside of one. And it's the last of these which becomes the roots which one starts with to really understand grasping, to really understand clinging, really understand attachment. Because as you will understand from studying the suttas and listening to people who have attained these things, that you will not be able to overcome the grasping, the clinging, the attachment of sensory pleasure until one has overcome the clinging grasping onto the view of a self. It is the self-view which has to be overcome first of all. That clinging and grasping onto the idea of I and mine and me, which has to be the first thing which is overcome in this gradual practice. If one can overcome that, then it becomes possible to overcome the attachment to the sensory pleasures. And if one has overcome the attachment to the sensory pleasures, the pleasures of the five senses I mean here, then it becomes possible to overcome the attachment to the pleasures of mind and relinquish the last part of that which keeps one clinging, attached, fixed to samsara. And one is let go, the asavas have gone, and one is arahat. So the first of the attachments which we really should, these are the deep attachments which we should overcome, is this attachment to the view of self, atta, a me, a mine, a myself. In particular, the way the Buddha taught this, he said that what we should investigate is this body and mind, that which we take to be myself, me, mine, in terms of the five khandhas, the five groups of existence. The body, the feeling, the vedana, the sanya, the perception, the sankhara, the mentality, apart from the feeling and the mental format and the perception, and this process of consciousness itself, the five khandhas. And the Buddha was saying that it's usually the attachment which we call the view of a self is usually caught up with these five khandhas, with these five groups. We take one of these, a group of these, or something within these to be a self, and we attach, we cling to this. What the Buddha said is that each one of these khandhas, each one of these things which make up our illusion of a self, are real in themselves, but the illusion is we take them to be something other than they truly are. We do not see them yathābhūta jñāna dasana. We do not see them as they truly are. We see them to be something else, something other than they are. And what we see them to be other than they are is we see them to be, first of all, to be self, to be an I, to be me, to be mine. And this is the attachment which we have to overcome first of all if we are to progress towards enlightenment. Again, the Buddha was saying that the way we see this is to make the mind free from the five hindrances, and then to use the investigative faculty of mind, to use like clear thinking based on experience, to ask oneself, rupa, the body, is it permanent or impermanent? Is it anicca or not? And it should not be beyond one's powers to see very clearly in a deep level that this physical body of ours is impermanent, is uncertain, it does change. We know that one day, as we were chanting in the funeral chants, it will lay like a log tossed in the forest. It will eventually be burned to ashes. Eventually it will go. We know this, we should see this. But in particular, the Buddha went on to say that what is impermanent, is that dukkha or sukha, monks? He not only said this to monks, he said this to Brahmins, he said this to many people, and the right answer was consistently given to be that what is impermanent, that is dukkha. Yad anicchaṃ tad dukkhaṃ. That whatever is impermanent, that is dukkha. And in many places that he was referring here to the five khandhas, he was asking, is the body permanent or impermanent, monks? The monk said it's anicca, the Lord Buddha, Blessed One, it's anicca. And is what is anicca? Is that sukha or dukkha? It is dukkha. And the context makes it clear that the Buddha was saying specifically here that the body is dukkha. And that feeling, vedana, is that impermanent or permanent, monks? It's anicca, impermanent. And what is impermanent is that dukkha or sukha? That is dukkha, Lord. That the feeling, the vedana, is dukkha. Is sanya anicca or nicca? Is it permanent or impermanent, monks? Sanya, this perception, it's impermanent. What is impermanent? Is that dukkha or sukha? It is dukkha. Even sanya is dukkha. I'll pause here for a moment. What does sanya mean? Sanya just is the perceptive ability of the mind. The mind which reviews the sensory impression and gives it a name according to its learning, according to its behavior. It categorizes and fixes it in the phenomenological world so that one can understand what this is, whether it says man or woman, whether it says bright or dark, whether it understands it as red or yellow. This is just a function of sanya. Now I ask you, why did the Buddha say this is dukkha? Just naming, just giving it a label. Why? Just by itself is this dukkha. If you understand that, you start to understand that the activity of the senses, including the activity of the mind, can be compared to an irritation, can be compared to even a disease of existence, if you like. I will go back to that in a moment. And sankhara, just the mental world, the mental formations, all that goes on in the mind, whether it's thinking, whether it's the emotions, whether it's choice and will, that all of these things, the Buddha asks, is this anicca or nicca? It is impermanent. Anicca, Lord, said the monks. And what is impermanent is that sukha or dukkha. That is dukkha, the monks answered. And the Buddha affirmed that everything which arises in the mind and passes away again, but that, because of its impermanence, just because of that, it is dukkha. And he went on lastly to consciousness itself, this vijnana, the consciousness which cannot be separated from the object of consciousness. Consciousness is an experience, not a thing, not an object. It is an experience, it is a happening, it is a phenomena. One cannot have consciousness without being conscious of something. The separation of consciousness from its object can only be done by the speculative mind, and it has no real reality in the experiential world. It is just a speculation, just a fantasy, to think there can be consciousness without being conscious of something. So the consciousness is really an experience. And once one looks clearly at the meaning of consciousness, it becomes also very evident that conscious experience is also something which arises and passes away. That the consciousness moves from one sense to the other through the six senses, can maintain its connection to one of the senses continually for a while, but eventually it must pass and change. And even when it's on one sense, the object of consciousness often changes, and with it consciousness. Because that one cannot have consciousness without an object of consciousness, because consciousness is an experience, not a thing. When the Buddha asked, is consciousness permanent or impermanent, monks, the monks answered very quickly and correctly, anicca. And so is consciousness, monks, that which is anicca, is impermanent. Is that sukha or dukkha? Dukkha, monks. Consciousness, no matter what one is conscious of, no matter what the object of consciousness, the conscious experience by itself, the Buddha was saying here clearly in the suttas, unequivocally was saying it's dukkha. Conscious experience, because it arises and passes away, is dukkha. For each one of the five khandhas can be looked upon as dukkha. But you should know that the experience, again, is not just one particular khanda. but the experiential experience, that which is actually true to our senses, contains just the consciousness having an object and appearing as a sankhara, as a sanya, as a vedana, often incorporating a rupa, a form as well, but not always. There can be that which is just made of mind, for the four kanda world of consciousness, sankhara, sanya and vedana, without rupa. However, there's usually the rupa there. Usually that one experience is a mixture of all of those five khandhas, just like seeing an apple, you see its shape and its redness at the same time. These are aspects of one conscious experience. However, whether one particularizes these or one groups them together, because each part is anicca and each part is changing, it means that however one groups these things together, experience is dukkha. And what the Buddha was saying, that when we say attachment, what we are attached to is dukkha. And what a stupid, what a silly position we find ourselves in, when that which we are attached to is nothing more and nothing less than dukkha itself. If only we could see that, then we would begin to let go. However, because of the view of a self, because of this illusion within us, we refuse to see what the Buddha taught very clearly in the suttas. We refuse to see that the five khandhas are dukkha, because it is within the five khandhas we've invested the illusion of a self, the sense of self. We protect it at all costs, at the cost even of faith in the Buddha's teachings, at the cost of rationality. Anything, we would bend the truth like a politician to save our skin. However, what the Buddha said is quite clear, and this method which the Buddha said to look at the five khandhas and to follow this little argument will show one that these five khandhas are dukkha, and being attached, what we're attached to, is no more than dukkha. If one would see that the five khandhas are themselves dukkha, then it would be possible and very likely to happen that one would let go of regarding these five khandhas or any part of them in the following way. One would not regard these as etang mamma, esohang asmi, eso me atta. I would not regard these things as mine. I would not regard these things as I am. I would not look upon these things as atta, as self. If one could only see this clearly, that would be the result. However, because one refuses to see this clearly, that one attaches to some part of the five khandhas, clinging to this to be me, to be mine, to be a self. And so the problem, the training becomes seeing where or what in these five khandhas one looks upon, one regards as being I, mine, or a self. Again, the threefold investigation, or the threefold function of self or soul, is the I am, mine, and self, the self. That one should investigate in all three ways according to the five khandhas. What do you take to be mine? What do you take yourself to be, I am, you identify with? And what do you take the self to be? Investigate and give up the attachment to a particular self-view, to regarding consciousness or the chetana or will or any other part. Give up that and see the truth which the Buddha saw, and see that none of these five khandhas, nothing within them, nothing outside of them, can truly be regarded as I am, mine, or a self. The giving up of the attachment to the sense of self is the pivotal point in the path to enlightenment. Once that occurs, everything follows. But without that, one is, as it were, banging one's head against a solid brick wall of delusion and never getting through. If one could only see that that which one assumes to be a self is dukkha, is a cause of suffering and pain, is in its very nature dukkha, unpleasant, irritation, a disease. If I could only see that, then one would let go of regarding it as me or mine. Consciousness, can you regard that as dukkha yet? Very often, this is the old simile of the tadpole being born in the lake. Because it's born in the lake, grown up in the lake, lived in the lake, it doesn't know that water is wet. So often, because we've never let go of consciousness, removed consciousness, settled consciousness, tranquilized consciousness, it's very hard for us to get out and know that consciousness is dukkha. It's very hard for the tadpole to know that water is wet. Sometimes we just have to take it in confidence of the Buddha and the Kuba Ajahn. Chetana, will, choice. If we could only see that that is dukkha, if we know it experientially as dukkha, we can feel the irritation, the pain, the burden, the heaviness of will. Wouldn't we give it up? Would we let it go? One can test the level of attachment one has to these things, as I pointed out on many occasions, when one meditates. Can one let go of conscious experience? Or is the mind just so caught up with listening that any sound outside grabs the interest of the mind? Or rather, as Ajahn Chah used to say, the mind grabs it. Sound doesn't disturb you, you disturb the sound. Or rather, an attachment goes out and takes the sound into the mind to unsettle the meditation. Why does that happen? Because one is still attached to sensory consciousness. If one wasn't attached, one would let it go. When the mind becomes more still and one starts to gain the samadhi nimitta, the thing, the object which takes one into deep states of calm, what is one of the biggest obstacles? It is will, the chetana coming from the delusion of self, which will not let go of control. We'll still keep giving orders. We'll not let you just sink in to where the mind is tending and leaning to and wanting to go. And the Chaitanya keeps the mind noisy. The thoughts, the orders born of choice and will. One cannot let go of these things because one is attached to this mental formation, to this sankhara of Chaitanya. Why is one attached to it? Because one hasn't seen this is dukkha, this is anatta. If one could only, when one is meditating, if one gets to this stage, if one could only just reflect and realize, if only mindfulness could come up to remind you, which is one of the functions of mindfulness, to remind you of the Dhamma, to remind you that all this Chaitanya-motivated or Chaitanya-originated, this volition-originated thinking and giving orders is suffering, is a pain, is an irritation. If one really saw it as it truly was, then the attachment would be broken. One would let go and the mind would enter into the jhana with ease. The opposite of attachment is called detachment, which is often a translation of the word viveka from the verb viwechati. Its gerund is vivicha, having detached. And that's why the first jhana is having detached from the world of the senses, the five senses, from unwholesome states of mind. One enters into the first jhana and one experiences a joy and happiness born of detachment. I usually use the word aloofness, but because this talk is about attachment, I wanted to bring out the meaning of viveka or vivicha as the opposite of attachment. It's only when one can detach that one can enter into such a thing as a jhana. And the ability to enter jhana is a measure of your detachment. An experiential measure, not just a thought or speculation in your mind of how attached you are or how detached you are. This is like a thermometer which everyone else can read and which is pretty much unmistakable. So you can find if you're attached or detached. If you can't enter, what are you attached to? Look there. You find there's some part of the five khandhas which you still think as being a form of sukha, still feel as being yours. So that the attachment, the first attachment which really gets broken, is the view of any of these five khandhas being me, being mine, being a self. Once this view, this idea is given up, and another view, another idea, the view and idea of seeing things as they truly are, arises in the mind, then one is a stream enterer. I'd make it clear here that the overcoming of the view of self gives rise to another view, the view of non-self. The stream enterer and the arahat are someone who still has a view, a way of looking at the world, of the mind, an understanding, an overview, if you like, but a true view. And it's not valid to say that the arahats or even the sotapanna have no view. I've never met a human being in this world who is without a view. Even the arahats, you ask them about the Dhamma and they say the same things, the arahats. Same thing as the Buddha said, which you read in the books. That is a view. It's called right view, sammāditti. But they don't take that view as being mine, me, or a self. That's why it doesn't count as dit-upadāna. It is just the way things are, truly are, which can be seen at any moment when the mind is clear of the hindrances and powerful with energy. Once those upadana, the atavada upadana, the attachment to the idea of self, the silabhata upadana, the attachment to rites and rituals being able to get you to enlightenment, the attachment to these wrong views is overcome, then the mind never looks, or very rarely looks, in terms of an I doing this. When we talk about attachment, it is something attaching to something else. When there's no sense of self there, the very origin of attachment is taken away. When there's no I, no me, no mine there, there can be nothing to attach. Instead, what one sees, instead of like I letting go of something, one sees that attachment is just a way the mind has worked in the past, made of delusion. Attachment is just a particular function of this mental process when it's born of delusion. It's not that something is attached to something else. It is just a stupid mind clinging on to things which it doesn't deserve to be clung on to. Once one sees attachment as a process, one starts to see this detachment as also a process which is born of wisdom, seeing things as they truly are. And it's here that one starts to let go and detach of the world of the five senses. That particular attachment to the pleasure and comfort of the five external senses disappears by itself as a natural course. Once the sense of self has been seen for what it is, as a delusion, then truly one starts to look at all of these five khandhas as being dukkha. Whatever one experiences, the experiential moment is regarded as being suffering, as being an irritation, as being something which by its very nature gives rise to nibbida. Once the experiential moment has lost its sense of self, it's looked upon as being nibbida, something which is a burden and a pain, something which by its very nature causes you to, or causes a mind to move away, causes a mind to let go and give up. Once this happens, you find that detachment happening naturally. Happening as naturally as a flower blooming in the forest. Happening as naturally as the clouds moving across the sky. Happening according to causes, not coming from a self or from anybody else. This is natural process. One starts to see detachment happening. one starts to see the detachment which we call viraga, the dispassion, the unloosening of passion from the mind, the passion towards the world of the five senses, whether it's food, whether it's sex, whether it's even basic comfort of the body, beautiful sights, beautiful sounds. One is detached from these things simply because they're a burden, they're an irritation. Even the most beautiful object of the senses, the five senses, the most beautiful food, the most delicious cake, cup of tea, or whatever, is looked upon as being an irritation to peacefulness, to this calming and settling, tranquilizing of the five senses. If I could only see this, the tranquilizing of the five senses would be a natural inclination of the mind. It would do this quite spontaneously at the very first opportunity. If it didn't have to be bothered and disturbed by the world of the five senses because of its duty to others, because of the interference by others, it would let go of the world of the five senses. Naturally, having seen it as a burden. This is not you choosing. This is not coming from a sense of self, me or mine or whatever. It's a natural result of insight and knowledge. And that becomes the experience of calming and tranquilizing the mind and entering to the jhanas. Sometimes that people think wrongly that the jhanas is just another attachment. The jhanas are a sign of the opposite, detachment. The jhanas are a result of letting go, not holding on. Someone told me when I was in Melbourne on an unfortunate visit recently that the reason why a bird can sleep on the tree at night without falling off is that when the bird fully relaxes, which it has to do to fall asleep, the claws on its feet grip tight onto the branch where it's standing. The state of letting go results, manifests into the claws gripping tightly. And the bird in the morning has to put effort in and strain to loosen that grip, because the muscles around that feet, when they're fully relaxed, make those claws grip and close. The bird is not attaching in its mind, in the essence, to that branch. It's actually letting go. The more it lets go, the more it is stable on the branch, the more it is safe from falling off into peril, into dukkha. It was a very beautiful simile for what we call jhanas, because when the mind lets go and relaxes from the world of the five senses, it manifests as the mind clinging on to the samadhi nimitta, just as with the bird without doing anything clings on to the branch of the tree, becomes stable, one-pointed, and can go into tranquility without fear of falling off. Just the more it lets go, the more stable it is on the branch. And it is the detachment, the giving up of attachment to the five-sensory world. The more one gives that up, the easier it is to enter into the jhanas. Again, what one is giving up here is not just the world of the five senses, but it's also the coarser aspect of the five khandhas, In particular, one is giving up the coarser form of rupa of the body. I said before that when one enters a jhana, the body, as it were, disappears. And it's a great relief to be rid of this body. Because how often do you have to move? Whenever you move the body, even twitch or fidget, ask yourself why. Be mindful enough to notice the movement of the body. This is one aspect of the mindfulness of the body, kayagata anusati. If one notices why one moves, one starts to see the irritation of having a body. Body is never at ease for very long. Because we've been doing this since we're born and we never notice it, we take it for granted, the body is never still. We lose insight, we don't understand this body is basically a burden, a pain. When you enter into a jhana and the body disappears, that by itself is a great relief, not to have to worry and be concerned about getting this body stable and peaceful. When all the pains in the body and the discomfort disappears, and for hours on end you don't have to move a muscle, you don't even think about the body, you don't even know the body is there, you just call out with the mind. Oh, what a relief. It's an example, an experiential example, which could give you the insight that the body is painful. It's essentially dukkha, whether one attaches to it or not. It's not the attachment which is dukkha, but one is attached to dukkha. The attachment isn't dukkha. The attachment causes dukkha. And one is attached to dukkha. If one can let go of it, it disappears. And letting go of the five khandhas is letting go of the world. If one wishes to be detached and give up attachment, one has to give up attachment to everything. As the Buddha said, that one has to give up attachment to all dhammas. What was it he said to Venerable Mahamoggallana? I think something like Sabbe Dhamme Nalang Abhinivesati. All dhammas are not worth attaching to, clinging to. A whole lot. If one didn't attach to them, well, actually he didn't say one should detach from these things. He's interesting the word or the way it's presented. No dhammas are worth attaching to. It's not that there's somebody attaching to something else. They're just attachment. When it's seen that attachment is not worthy in any area, then one lets go, or rather letting go happens. It is again the problem with language. When you say I let go, you cannot do it, because you start wrong from the very beginning. I let go of something. You try that throughout your monastic life, trying to let go of this and let go of that. If it comes from I, you will never really be able to succeed. Maybe just for a moment, but not truly, not deeply. If it's coming from the view of the self, then you haven't really started the full detachment. So one lets go of all of these things, all dhammas, I'll let go of. And with that letting go, with that detachment, just again like the bird on the branch. It manifests as the bird sitting still, calm and tranquil on the branch, without any effort. The enlightened being keeps the precepts. The enlightened being follows the rules of Vinaya and doesn't fall off, no more than the bird falls off the branch of a tree. The enlightened being just spends time in the deep tranquil states of the mind just by letting go this clinging onto the branch of jhanas occurs. And the Dhamma, even though it may look as if one is holding on to a particular view, a particular Dhamma, is no more than the bird having completely given up being stable and still, resting on the branch, the great tree of the Dhamma which the Buddha bequeathed. So please know what attachment truly is and what detachment appears like. And please know that what one is attaching to is no more than dukkha. And if one could only see that in whatever form, then detachment, letting go, would occur. But it has to be seen, first of all, that one is attaching to self somewhere in the five khandhas. Because that which one is attaching to has not been seen as dukkha. See it as dukkha, see it clearly as dukkha, and letting go will happen. So this is the talk I'm giving this evening for 1 hour on attachment and its opposite. Has anyone got any questions or comments they'd like to ask on this evening's Dhamma discourse? So may you never fall off the branch. You can give the animal.
So.